Hi, everybody. I'm Lisa. I'm a compulsive overeater and living in Los Angeles. And I gotta say, this is so exciting for a couple of reasons. One, I love just talking to new people because they won't have heard me a thousand times. I've got 28 plus years of recovery from compulsive eating. So everybody out here has heard me so much. I just feel like, oh, I feel bad. But also, you guys are good at showing up, actually being visible on screen. I go to so many meetings where there might be 20, 25 people and like six people are visible. And it's just really lovely to actually see responses and see faces. And I don't care if you're looking down at your phone, you do you, but it's just nice to see actual faces. And because I miss the actual rooms. And I do need to get back to some real rooms, but there aren't any around me right now. So anyway, going back to hearkening back to 28 years ago, when I was 31, I came into the rooms because of an Eskimo. And what happened was I believe I was a compulsive eater my whole life. I believe I came out of the womb hungry and for something that food was the substitute for. But also I had sort of variations of this disease. I didn't like food as a child, unless it was very sweet. I don't want to mention things, I guess. I don't really know what you got, how you guys work it, but my mom used to bribe me with certain foods to get me to eat other foods. And it didn't work very well. I ate the same thing for 3 years. If anyone tried to give me anything else, it was disastrous. And then when I hit, and also we moved many places, like countries. As a child, I was a diplomat brat. So we moved so many places that anytime I got kind of a sense of comfort and familiarity and friends, we would move. And I was real shy. And so that was just, I was super lonely and super shy, and food was comfort, and food was like a constant. And we didn't really deal with our emotions in my family. I joke that the emotions were fine and nothing. Like I was allowed to feel fine and I was allowed to feel nothing. And they were loving people, but they just, you know, they had the tools they were given. And so if I felt anything other than fine or nothing, it wasn't really good. But I was allowed to feel sick. I used to get sick a lot. I hated gym. And so I would be sick, you know, I just happened to be sick every time, you know, gym rolled around. And we moved again when I hit puberty. It was a terrible time. We moved to a place that felt very clicky. I was super lonely and I liked food. All of a sudden I liked food. And I started binging and restricting, because also in the family, it was important to look okay. Whatever that meant. And so I got a lot of mixed messages. My mother was always dieting. She was always unsatisfied with her body. And it wasn't until I was an adult and looked back, I was like, she was beautiful and she was fine. And she was always self-loathing about her body. So we learn these things, right? And again, those were the tools she was given. No blame and no judgment now. But then, so I was binging, I was restricting to make up for it. When I binged, I also did some other substances that made binging kind of acceptable socially. Like if I had munchies, it was like, of course I'm gonna eat like a crazy person. I just have the munchies. And people didn't realize I would have done that anyway. But it was an excuse to do it in front of people, because otherwise I binged in private, the curtains closed, the TV on, the phone machine off, the answering machine off. That's the age I was in. And it would be, usually I would like not eat breakfast, not eat lunch, eat at maybe 4 and then have dinner and then binge at night, late at, 10 o'clock or whatever. And it would just be a cacophony of items in a bowl. And then I would have that pitiful incomprehensible demoralization they talk about in the big book, where, I'm not going to do that again. And the next time I did it, I just felt terrible. I just, why can't I, why is this happening? And it was just, it was my tool. These were my tools of getting through life. I just was so inept, really, at being an adult in the world or being a teenager in the world. And when I was an adult, I did get a therapist. And a year and a half in, I mean, I never talked about food until about a year and a half in, I mentioned that my niece had been diagnosed with anorexia. And I was like, and my mom does weird stuff with food. And I ate a lot last night. But anyway, and I like changed the subject to like whatever boy I had a crush on or something. And she was like, what are you talking about with food? And I was like, I don't know, our whole family does weird shit with food. And she was just like, you may want to try this program, Overeaters Anonymous. And I, of course, took it to mean a diet. Like, she thought I needed a diet, and I was kind of offended that she would say that. And it turned out she was in another program. So she was an amazing Eskimo. She was just, it was a God shot that she knew the program. And she said, try 6 meetings. And I was obedient because, you know, I was, for whatever reason, ready to be honest at that point in my life. And I went to the first meeting and I thought everybody was crazy because they were expressing emotions and crying and feeling. And I was like, what is wrong with everybody? I mean, you're clearly doing it in front of a total stranger. So what's wrong? Like, what's wrong with you? That was how twisted my concept was of being vulnerable in the world or being open or being honest with your feelings, any of it. It was just, it was terrifying. And I thought everybody was crazy. And then, the second meeting I went to, because like I said, I was obedient, I heard my story, this from a guy who like I had nothing in common with. I was like, oh, you know, like he was reading my diary. And I was like, huh, I guess I should be here. And I kept going. And I, if left to my own devices, I would still not have a sponsor. This is 28 years in, but somebody made herself available to me. She came up to me and she said, I will, you know, be your temporary sponsor. And she was my sponsor for 10 years. And she was, we were nothing alike in our program even. She had been a 20 time a day bulimic. But she knew that big book inside and out, upside down, backwards. She didn't want to chat. Like when I called, if I was like, oh, you know, I called every day for the first 30 days of my abstinence. And then once a week after that. And she, if I was like, oh, whatever's going on, she's like, what step is it? Like, you know, and she got me working the steps immediately. So it wasn't like I'm just calling to chat for a half hour. It's like I'm going to maybe speak for 4 minutes and then we're going to figure out what step it is. And then I'm going to go work that step around it. And it was great because I needed action. I needed to get into action. Like I said, I wouldn't have picked any human being because I was self-loathing because I was human. I wasn't perfect. And that was horrible to me. So the fact that any other human would be my sponsor didn't make sense. Like they would be imperfect too. They would be human. And I was so like, just how sad is that? That it was so anathema to me to just accept myself and other people as human and capable of mistakes and capable of great things. And so, you know, and as it says in the big book, like in the 12 and 12, I am not as good of a thumper as she is. Everyone's going to let us down. Our fellows are going to let us down and our sponsors are going to let us down. And that's why our rule of life has to be on the higher power. And that can be whatever it is to anybody. You know, for me, it has now become everything and everyone that makes up the universe is my higher power. It's like this river. I either go with the river or I fight it. If I fight it, I get exhausted and I drown. If I go with it, it tends to be easier. And I like things easy. I'm very lazy. So I do all this work because it benefits me. I am a selfish person. And to me, this is a selfish program. I am of service because it makes me feel better. I take outreach calls because it makes me feel better. I sponsor people because it reminds me of where I was. And guess what? It makes me feel better. I talk to my sponsor because it makes me feel better. Like everything I do it just happens to be that instead of the food that makes me feel better, because it then made me feel worse 15 minutes later, it's stuff that makes me feel better that sustains me. So I came in and my food cleaned up immediately, simply because I was tired of lying. As that, for whatever reason, I was ready to be honest. For the first 31 years of my life, I was not an honest person. I will tell you that if someone had tried to get me in program the day before I was ready, it would not have worked, and it would have probably pushed me another year or who knows how long, because I was a stubborn. I am stubborn. I was more stubborn. But for whatever reason, I was ready to be honest. So once I was honest with another human being, which was my sponsor, I didn't want to have to tell her I was binging. So I stopped binging. It was as simple as that. But like I said, I had many years of experience binging, so it was all right. And for me, my abstinence is I don't eat late at night. I don't eat after 10. I don't eat at night in front of the TV. I don't skip meals no matter what. I mean, that's not true. Not no matter what. If there's like, you know, I'm sleeping in because I felt sick or something. But for the most part, I don't skip meals. I don't make up for it. I've even had people in programs say to me, like, I'll turn over that I had too much to eat, and they'll be like, well, I'll just eat less tomorrow. And I'm like, no, that's not how I work. I can't. It gets me into a diet mindset, and that's just the road to hell for me. So, but if I do eat too much, if I feel like, if it just doesn't sit with me, I will call someone. I will call my sponsor first and then another person if I can't reach her. Because if it's still on my mind 15 minutes after I eat or 20 minutes after I eat, then it's not sane and guilt-free. And that's, for me, my abstinence is sane and guilt-free eating overall. So if it ain't sane and guilt-free, I'm calling somebody and I'm turning it over. And as I heard, I love this so much. I heard this once: if I turn it over, but I don't let it go, I'm hanging upside down. And I hate hanging upside down. I hate like those rides. I hate all of that stuff. So like, I got to let it go as well. And I'm an overthinker. I will hold on to stuff as long as I can, but all it does is cause me pain. So I have to let it go as well. And that means the next day I'm having breakfast at normal breakfast time, and I'm having a normal amount of breakfast. And, you know, I'm very grateful that for today, that's not, it's not a problem. You know, 99% of the time, I don't have to make those calls at the end of the night. But there are times when I'm like, oh, damn, it's 10:01. I'm not going to eat anymore. Like, I'll look at the clock and be like, I kind of feel a little peckish. Nope, I can have it tomorrow. That's all. It just makes me feel better at the end of the night. I do a lot of praying. I do some meditating. I would like to meditate more. My daily routine is I get up, I do the serenity prayer, third step prayer, seven step prayer. And I learned these two things from a sponsee that I just love. I ask God to let me be a blessing and to let me be a beacon of light. And then at the end of the day, I at some point meditate 20 minutes if I can. Sometimes it is 1 minute because I didn't use my time wisely. But at the end of the night, it's important to me to do a gratitude list. That's sort of my, if I don't need to do a 10 step, which that comes up as needed, but a gratitude list, 10 things I'm grateful for the day, because it helps set me right before I go to sleep. And sometimes it's almost like a lullaby at this point, because no matter how the day is gone, the fact that I made it through, I'm grateful. The fact that right now, you know, I have air conditioning, I'm super grateful. Just whatever it is, like a comfortable pillow. I can come up with 10 things I'm grateful for. And I've gone through a lot of loss in the last few years. My best friend died after being sick for about a year. And it was a really, really rough year. We all know what grief is. I hope you don't, but I have a feeling we all know it, or most of us know what grief is like. And I'm so grateful that I could come up with 10 things to be grateful for every night. Even in my worst grief, I was grateful that I could be of service to other people. I was grateful that it could be of service to me. I was grateful I didn't eat over it because, man, and I see the time. So that's five more, right?
Yeah, five more minutes.
Thanks so much, Heather. Man, you know, although I got to say, it's not the big stuff that makes me want to eat. The big stuff I can handle really well. I can handle the crises. It's afterwards. It's the mundane shit. It's just getting through the day sometimes. It's like my car, you know, if the car broke, if somebody, I got hit by a hit and run, like parked, got hit. Like little things like that will make me crazy. What is, there's a great, normal people, they get a flat tire, they call AAA, and people, and I get the nodded, we call suicide prevention. And that's sort of how I am with the smaller stuff. So I would love to say how everything's changed, but it's all changed so much. Like just the fact that I don't lie every day is a big change. Like before program, I would lie on the way to going some, if I was late or if I was maybe going to be late, I was coming up with the reason why I was late on the way there. I was lying before I even got there. Nobody cares if you're late. They just want you to apologize. Like they don't care what the reason. No, and like LA traffic, that's everybody's excuse. Like there's no excuse. You just apologize. But I would come up, like my brain was just going all the time with lies. And it's such a waste of energy. And having that lifted as a result of doing step 6 and 7, like having that lifted, it really was a weight off. Like it was really just like, oh, and it's so selfish too, to lie all the time. It's so self-absorbed. It's like, nobody cares what my excuses are. And to be an adult in the world and to be an abstinent woman of dignity means to take responsibility for my actions. When I am late, to apologize. When I've done something wrong, to apologize, to make amends. So let's see what else. Where else are we? I've jumped around a little bit. I try not to do the like, you need to do this, because everybody's got their own path. But for those who do not have a sponsor and are thinking about it, I strongly recommend it. Just again, makes me feel better. And I also think I can do the first three steps with anyone on like a trained dog, because it's the fourth step is when you need someone like that you really trust. But the first three, like just knock them out, man. They're so, I do them all the time. I do them as needed, right? I'm powerless over so many things. I have learned from this program, like I am a scared and skittish creature. And so I do the first step on everything I'm scared about when it comes up. And it all comes up a lot. I mean, I was just traveling and that was like, you know, I'm scared about the airport. I'm scared about the plane. I'm scared, like you name it. I'm working a first step around it as needed. And I also don't do any of this perfectly. My first fourth step was like so short because I just didn't think I had much of an effect on anybody else. And it took, you know, my second fourth step and my third fourth step and my relationship fourth step and my fear inventory to like really get deep on all this stuff. But I didn't do any of it particularly well at first, but I did get through it. In my first year, I got through all 12 steps. That felt important to me to just keep moving. And then I've done them over and over the years. Let me think, what else is there? Talked about my higher power. Oh, and when I first came in the rooms, like, I don't know what, where everybody's stages of recovery are, but when I first came in the rooms, you guys were all my higher power, because for 1 hour or an hour and a half, my brain quieted down. And I could listen and I could hear honesty, which was still new to me. And that was a power greater than myself. The way that made me feel was like magic. And then I'd go out and be crazy again. I remember one time I went to a meeting. I was driving to a meeting and I pulled over, called my sponsor and told her, I've decided I don't need to go to the meeting. Like I was on the way there. And she said, okay, well, Why don't you just say thank you for your input, broken brain, and continue on your way? And I have taken that as a metaphor for everything. I love that so much because that's left to my own devices. My brain is broken. And because of these steps and because of all of you, because of the tools, thank you. I get to be useful in the world. So thank you so much for letting me share.